Welcome to the AFC edition of Week 7 action here at the Student of the Game. There's an old saying out there that the best officials are the ones you don't notice in the game. Our show today should prove just how the performance of the NFL officials of late are. I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game. To my right, Chris Weasel, ready to bring you some action. And we're going to start off going on a little segue, handle a little bit of old business, because the whole anomaly of the devastating hits and the rules with head-to-head contact and all this other stuff, look, I know they've been going on about it all this past week, but the story didn't break until Weasel and I concluded last week, and so we didn't really get a chance to talk about it. But all this is the fault of essentially one man, and that would be Rodney Harrison, who on NBC's Football Night in America said, pretty much paraphrasing here, fines don't affect players from doing hits like that that are illegal in the rule book. Suspensions are what you need to do to make the difference. And so began the onslaught of ridiculousness. The idea put forth was that hits in the NFL, helmets and helmets are right off, leading with your head are right out, and that the rules behind them will be more strictly enforced. In the rule book today, you know, a suspension or a fine is supposed to be levied when a helmet-to-helmet hit or a defender leads with his helmet. When either of those occur, you're supposed to get a suspension or a fine levied. The concern, though, is what the definition of that really is or should be. There were a number of hits that took place, and by now, everybody's heard of the Brandon Merriweather hit where he speared Todd Heap in the head with his helmet long after the ball passed over, all of that. Granted, this is 2 weeks ago at this point now, but I just wanted to hear a few thoughts from people. Weasel, you being a Steelers fan, James Harrison was implicated in two of the hits against the Browns. One against Muhammad Massaquoi, and the other against Josh Cribbs. He was essentially fined $75,000 for those hits. Wasn't levied a suspension. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think in this game, Harrison was actually, he backed off on some plays where I believe there was a receiver that he like dropped the pass, and normally where he would hit the crap out of him, he backed off.
Okay, so
and this week, not
right,
week's,
right.
And but last
you're referring
week,
to this
okay,
week.
I was okay, but last right. week, I think they were, maybe you can see him as excessive. And okay. he was looking to, I think a lot, some players, they say, hit him in the jaw. You try to hit him in the helmet. You try to, get the big hit. But I remember on, I think it was ESPN, Merrill Hodge was talking about how you could still get a big hit by lowering your shoulder. You put your shoulder in their stomach, mm-hmm. and then you wrap them. Mm-hmm. You wrap them up, and you could still get a devastating hit. I remember, I believe it was Ray Lewis, had a huge hit on someone, and it was completely clean.
Last tied in for the Jets in Week 1 is one that they referenced, too, against Kellen, not Kellen Clemens, what's the tight end's name?
Dustin Keller.
Dustin Keller, yeah. There we go.
So, I mean, you can play cleaner, and, I mean, as evidence going to this week, though, Brandon Merriweather even said that he played differently. Mm-hmm. And it showed, so Harrison played differently, Merriweather played differently, and it was a fairly clean week, and you could still deliver devastating hits, but the result wouldn't be as catastrophic.
So Harrison talking about considering retirement was apparently a little bit overblown.
He was disappointed about it, but hey, so it is part of the game. But concussions, I mean, it's a big deal. So maybe it's for the good.
See, the hit against Joshua Cribbs, I mean, that was not too much. Cribbs is getting tackled. He's kind of diving in there to make sure he doesn't go any more yards. Yeah, diving leads with the head or whatever. But the Massaquoi hit, yeah, they said Massaquoi did come down a little bit. He hit. But if you look at slow replay, his head is down. They teach you in Pop Warner that you hit with your head up. And when he's hitting down, he's coming up as well. He's not trying to wrap. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the fine is, and that's why that was what it stick. That was the problem.
Oh,
that they're showing. But then that goes against the refs that they should have called it on that one too. And they didn't. When the ref was right there 5 yards away, didn't even call it helmet to helmet. That's why the whole thing was blown out of proportion, because if the ref would have called it helmet to helmet, it wouldn't have got this much publicity of they didn't call it.
I think you're 50% correct on that. The publicity came from the fact that there were so many hits of this nature in this particular week.
And then also the college Rutgers player that was paralyzed over the, on Saturday.
Yeah, that set up the mood.
5 yards away from where basketball got hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was on the same exact field.
Mm-hmm. The previous day, and then, right, yeah. And then in the NFL that week, there were a number of hits that were discussed openly in the public eye. The Merriweather Heath hit, these two hits by Harrison, the collision between Dante Robinson and Roddy White, I believe it was.
Who was it?
But it was one of the receivers.
Yeah,
we'll leave it at that. And that hit. Well, right. But that hit was.
Deshaun Jackson.
That's what it was.
It was Deshaun Jackson. Okay, yeah, they were. Okay, right. Okay, they were playing the Eagles. There you go. So it was against Deshaun Jackson, hit by Dante Robinson, where Robinson led with the shoulder, and then kind of the aftershock of the hit pushed the players upwards so that their helmets met.
Right.
And I've been griping about that back when the Student of the Game was still in print and they would victimize John Lynch thusly, where he would make a clean hit, and just because his hit was so clean and hard, there would be some sliding into going helmet to helmet. Dante Robinson fined $50,000, the same amount that Merriweather was fined for spearing Heath with his head, and the play was legal, even in the rule book. I mean,
well, I haven't played football, I just play, you know, flag type of thing,
mm-hmm.
flag football, but he led with the shoulder, and then went up. I mean, why did he get the concussion?
Because he went up with his helmet.
They both went up when they
hit. Yeah.
That was the momentum of the impact. Yeah,
they were both going for the ball, they were in the air, and they were both coming up, and they hit.
They both actually went down, and I think they'll have to leave the game, both of them. And you made the point about playing flag football. You've seen times where, and I mean, we played on the same field, touch football or whatever, you've seen times where players will collide and there's no tackling involved.
Yeah.
So when the point is to hit people, how can he be wrong?
Yeah.
And the fact that that hit got fined was what led to all the hysteria, not to mention at first people were misunderstanding what was being said, that they thought new rules were coming. Well, that was wrong from the top. Some press release got botched by ESPN, all of that. I don't remember the precise details. It's really not worth rehashing. But the other thing that I think that really scared people in the football community is that Dante Robinson got punished for making what was really a good play. He paid for it as well, it said. And so here's the thing that I started to get to think about, too. What about running backs or quarterbacks? Or even worse than that, I play O-line for the Rage right now. And, you know, Chris played some in high school, so he knows a little bit about what I'm talking about here, too. I'm playing at left or right tackle on the offensive line. And on a running play, I'm supposed to go to the second level and block a linebacker. He makes a move a certain direction that I can't predict. And in blocking him, we hit helmet to helmet. Would I get flagged?
Yeah.
I mean, at what point do we draw the line and remember that the people who are here are getting paid millions to take that risk? At what point is it about, you know, is it less about the marketing, or excuse me, more about the marketing than the game itself? There's a line to be drawn. Look, protecting players is great, but only legislate against malice. And like Chris said, if people are using poor forms, you need to get on that, too. Anybody remember the name Keith Everett? For those who don't, the guy who got paralyzed, Bills, who got paralyzed leading with his head on special teams. I have said from the top regarding that, I think we were still at a podcast, we got to a podcast at that point, but I'll say it again. I'm happy to see him recover as greatly as he does. I'm glad to see him walk again, and all that's fantastic. Never felt sorry for him that he got hurt. Why? His own fault. For leading with his head on a special teams play. Now, helmet-to-helmet rules being in place, good. Defenders leading with their helmet rules being in place, good. Dante Robinson should not have been punished, and that play should never be legislated against. The perfect storm that was this week, or last week rather, the perfect storm that was last week for all those hits to happen in the same week caused a knee-jerk reaction. And everybody says, oh, look, the rule did its job. There were no big hits this week. You know what I think happened? Just what happens in every other week. Normal play resumed, and it so worked out that there just weren't any hits that were helmet-to-helmet based on rules that were in place before anyway. It was a calm after the storm, and things just went back to normal. And that's it.
You know, there was a play in the Saints game that, I can't remember what the team it was, but ball was thrown a little high, and you know when the ball's thrown a little high, you usually go hit them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It slow up a little bit. I mean, you go like lay them out at the ball hits or something like that. Usually the receiver's up there, just come by and hit them even though they didn't catch the ball or whatever. They held up on that. So, I mean, that could have been.
And the receiver made the catch, right?
No, he didn't make the catch.
Okay.
It was a high ball, you know, the receiver's jumping up in the air, you know, after the ball's usually gone, someone always comes up and hits them.
Yeah.
You know, if they're close by.
Oh, so it would have been more like the Merriweather hit. If it had taken place.
Right, but, it, you know, but, I mean, kind of like that motion, but it was, you know, they held up.
Okay.
Just kind of like,
And maybe in some cases it did make a difference. I mean, I know Weasel referenced Jerome Harrison, or James Harrison, sorry, and Merriweather both saying that the talk of more excessive enforcement did get them to pull back. But for me, I think it just way too much was made of it. Enough so that we had to actually talk about it.
Yeah, see, and everyone saying, oh, Ray Lewis is hitting everything, what they were saying. Yeah, he led with his shoulder, his head was up, and he tried wrapping up.
Mm-hmm.
James Harrison doesn't try to wrap up.
And he was asked about that hit that you were talking about. I heard him being interviewed on the radio, and his response when they asked him, and you do that because of the rules and stuff. No, man, I'm just playing football. In other words, he just has good form. James Harrison, as much as I enjoy him, did not. That simple.
It's just one of those things. I mean, one time you go to hit, and the guy will catch himself or something and take off longer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I always teach you head up and wrap up. Teach you from day one when you're a top corner in the TV.
So, anyways, I think we spent enough time on that. Speaking of other things that get way too much attention, I give you both the Patriots and the Chargers. They played each other this weekend. Very interesting matchup in the AFC. The Chargers. Kind of in the same place as the Vikings right now, record-wise, except they play in a much worse division out in the AFC West.
And much more injuries.
And they got a lot more injuries and all this other stuff, right? Although, the Vikings have one very important injury, but we already talked about that in our previous episode there. The Patriots managed to beat the Chargers 23-20, but it's not that cut and dry. We'll get to the ending here in a minute. Tom Brady went 19 for 32, 59%, 159 yards with a touchdown. Excuse me. Phillip the Frog Rivers, 34 of 50, 68%, 336 yards, a touchdown, also had an INT and a lost fumble. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, the guy they start to call the firm because of all the blame and ball firm, right?
I like that.
11 carries, 24 yards, 2.2 a carry, had a touchdown. Danny Woodhead, the Jet in the preseason, now come on to be an excellent contributor for the Patriots. 8 carries for 24 yards, 3 yards a carry. On the ground for the Chargers, top carrier was Ryan Matthews, 8 for 15, 1.9 a carry. Aaron Hernandez led the passing yardage once again for the Patriots. He had 5 catches for 54 yards. Deion Branch, not so much replacing... What's up? Deion Branch replacing not so much as... Not replacing so much as just filling in for. Randy Moss had 4 catches for 39 yards. West the Weapon Welker had 4 catches of his own for 25 yards. Danny Woodhead had 3 catches for 28 yards. And another tight end, Ron Gronkowski, 2 catches, 10 yards with a touchdown. In the air for the Chargers, Patrick Creighton doing a lot more for the Chargers than he did for the Cowboys, 7 catches for 82 yards. Darren Sproles had 9 catches for 70 yards. Rashard Goodman had 1 catch for 25 yards, but I'm only talking about a 1 catch receiver for one reason. He lost a fumble. Well, he might have, I'm going to mention that. He could have gotten a touchdown, I was just thinking. Buster Davis had 6 for 53. The only receiver on the day to have a touchdown despite his ankles, or excuse me, his broken toe was Antonio Gates, 4 catches, 50 yards with a touchdown.
And that all came in the second half. He wasn't even thrown to in the first half.
Absolutely right. The anomaly in place is the Chargers losing even though they led in third corner percentage, 7 of 15, 46%, while the Chargers were 3 of 12. a lot of that would have been in the third quarter when they were moving the ball pretty well.
And not coughing it up in the first half.
Exactly. The Patriots were up at one point 23 to 13. And the Patriots, the Chargers then got a touchdown. And late in the fourth quarter, say about 6 to 9 minutes left, go for the onside kick, get the onside kick. Kind of a big deal, that. Just, you know, seems to me. It's actually, let me make sure I have the score right here. Yeah, okay. For the fourth quarter, 17 points by the Chargers. Kind of a big deal. The Patriots were up 23-10. I said 13, that's my mistake. They get a touchdown by way of Antonio Gates. Their fullback, Colbert. Antonio Gates had the touchdown before. Go for the onside kick. Get the onside kick. Then they drive the field, set up a chance to win. Nate Cady comes out, goes for the field goal, and shake eponymous. So, as close as this game was to being overtime, it wasn't. The Patriots win, throwing off Chris's efforts.
Chris Brown. Nickname, I don't think it's on the team anymore.
Okay,
yeah,
so
they newly acquired Chris Brown.
Okay, there you go.
Good
save on that. Yeah, so Chris Brown, former Texans kicker, is their kicker now. I knew that too. I just had it wrong in my notes. Excellent effort on the onside kick. However, could not finish the deal with a missed field goal. Kind of a big deal. The Chargers in bad shape, only at 2-5. And, yeah. Further bad news coming in what happened in the Jags game. Why did the Jags matter? Well, because the Jags were on the road, which inevitably means they lose, and they lost to the Chiefs. The Jags facing off against the Chiefs lost 42-20. Todd Bowman at quarterback due to the David Garrard injury, 18 completion for 34 attempts, 53%, 222 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 INTs. That's a whole lot of twos, but not a good performance. Perhaps his performance was number two.
The two interceptions came late in the game, too, in the second half.
That's correct.
They're waiting for him to throw interceptions. It's got to be an interception. It's got to be an interception.
At some point, he's going to blow it, because I'd rather him throw an interception than us let Mojo run. That's a bad idea. Matt Castle for the Chiefs had 13 completions for 18 attempts, 72%, 193 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Mojo, Maurice Jones-Drew, had 16 carries for 47 yards, 2.9 a carry. Slow day for him. Deji Kareem, however, the rookie, had 5 carries for 29 yards, 5.8 a carry. On the ground for the Chiefs. This running game is getting to where whenever we mention the Chiefs, we have three names. Thomas Jones carried the ball 20 times for 125 yards, 6.25 a carry. Did have a big 70-yard touchdown. So for the remaining 19 carries, he only had 55 yards at 2.9 a carry. Jamaal Charles had 15 carries for 71 yards at 4.1 a carry. And Dexter McCluster, I finally got his name right, had 4 carries for 28 yards, 7 yards a carry. So Maurice Jones-Drew had 5 catches for 74 yards with a touchdown. And Mercedes Lewis also had 3 catches for 24 yards. Michael Sims-Walker had 3 catches for 38 yards and a touchdown of his own. In the air for the Chiefs, Dwayne Bowe had 3 catches for 81 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Tony, I'm going to struggle with this every time, so correct me if I get it wrong, guys. Tony Moiaki?
Moiaki.
It is Moiaki?
Moiaki.
So it's like one of the three stooges and Aki. So like he tries to drink sake or something. Anyways, so yeah, he had.
or you're from Boston and trying to pronounce Milwaukee. Milwaukee.
That's pretty smart, actually. 2 catches for 42 yards. Did neglect to mention a carry by 3 carries by Jackie Battle for 12 yards. No one cares about that. He did, however, score a touchdown. Dexter McCluster led the Chiefs in receiving. He had 5 catches for 41 yards. So basically, the long story short on this game, the Chiefs had 8 minutes more time of possession, but moved the ball a lot better. 30% by the Jags on third down versus 54% by the Chiefs on third down. Kind of, yeah, that's a lot more offensive motion than I ever would have expected from them, and that's with less than 200 yards passing.
A lot of those came from the Dixon run, like Buster's catches. They bring him out of the backfield and roll Castle out and dump it to him on their kind of run. They get the yards that way for the first down.
So the Jags had two interceptions. They had a lost fumble also by Mike Thomas, the receiver. Three turnovers to none. That's the kind of way you would win football games. That's all there is to it. Speaking of teams winning and losing football games and having possibly extra teammates involved, we'll talk about the Dolphins facing off against the Steelers. Weasel, bring it.
The Steelers improved to 5-1 with a 23-22 road victory against the Dolphins. For the Steelers, Big Ben Roethlisberger was 19-27, 70%, 302 yards, 2 touchdowns, no INTs. He was sacked. He was sacked 3 times and lost 1 fumble. No, the majority says he lost 2. More on that later. In the receiving game, Hines Ward, 7 catches for 131 yards, 1 touchdown. Mike Wallace had 2 for 53 with a touchdown. Woody Moore had 4 for 48. And Keith Miller, at tight end, had 3 for 33. In the running game, Rashard Menenhall had 15 rushes for 37 yards, 2.5 average. Woody Moore and Isaac Remen combined had 7 for 20. Big Ben had 5 scrambles for a yard. For the special teams, the Steelers, rookie kick returner Emmanuel Sanders lost a fumble on the opening kickoff. Kicker Jeff Reed was 3-3 on field goals. For the Dolphins, Chad Henne was 23 of 36, 63%, 257 yards, 1 touchdown, no INTs. He was sacked once. In their saving game, Devon Bess had 6 catches for 66 yards, 1 touchdown. Ryan Hartline and Brandon Marshall each had 5 for 57. Tight end Anthony Cassano had 3 for 49. Ronnie Brown had 2 for 20. In the running game, Ricky Williams had 11 rushes for 48 yards, 4.4 average. Ronnie Brown had 9 for 14, 1.6 average. For special teams, the Dolphins had kicker Dan Carpenter, 5 of 5 on field goal. Now, after a Dolphins
field goal. 5 for 5 on field goal, more than that. More on that later, because that's going to be a factor later. Definitely.
After a Dolphins field goal put them up 22-20, the Steelers got the ball back in good field position with 5 minutes left in the game after a 48-yard return by Sanders. The Steelers then drove down the field, which brought them to the 3rd and goal at the Miami 2-yard line. Big Ben goes up the middle for a run, dives to the end zone. It looks as if the ball is hit out of his hands before he crosses the goal line. The ruling on the field, though, is that he broke the plane for a touchdown. On the challenge, it is obvious that he fumbles before the goal line. It then goes into the end zone, and it appears to have been covered by the Dolphins. On the replays, the refs were not able to determine who recovered the fumble. You got to see it. The refs, they looked at the replays in that little booth, and they couldn't, without a doubt, say who recovered the ball, because I think the one ref put his arms up for the touchdown, so they were focusing on that, and they just kind of blew the whistle and stopped the play, essentially. So that gave the Steelers the ball back at the half-yard line. So they just rolled it a fumble. I think it was rolled a fumble, but they didn't know who got it, so they just gave the ball to the Steelers. The Steelers kicked an 18-yard field goal to put them up. Game was not over, though. The Dolphins got the ball back at their own 29-yard line with 2:19 left. No timeouts, but they did have the 2-minute warning to stop the clock. 4 now, with a 2-yard run and then 3 incomplete passes. Steelers nail it down 3 plays for the win.
So, where this takes us, and we'll get to the debate section of this later. What essentially happens, to summarize all that? The instant that Roethlisberger's attempt to get in the end zone was ruled a fumble, the Steelers can no longer progress the ball forward. It's not an option. As a matter of fact, it only is not an option. It's illegal. Okay, so that's why when whatever was determined by the officials, why the ball was back on the half-yard line, because that's where he fumbled it. Offense can't advance a fumble.
Yeah.
Simply put. The ruling on the field being a touchdown, that was correctly overturned. The officials did their part to rectify that part of it. However, this is a two-part situation. The fumble and you have a little bit of perspective on this, Chris. You were talking about before the show, the fumble appeared to be recovered by the Dolphins, and then like one of the refs.
The fumble was recovered by the Dolphins, and one of the back judges came up and was tapping the Dolphins on the saying, white ball, Dolphins recovered the fumble, and so that all the players were getting up.
Uh-huh.
But when they review it, you don't hear volume on the replays. So the refs needed to get together and talk about it. When that guy said, yes, the Dolphins had the ball, no, it's only the head ref that goes over the replay booth
mm-hmm.
and comes up and says there's insufficient evidence because they don't see who comes up with the ball at the end or who jumps on it. You can clearly see that there's two Dolphins on the bottom of the pile. You have a back judge coming up saying white ball.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, so, that's the part I take issue with more than anything else. But first of all, let me go another direction here. All these apologist members of the media who keep coming out with the, oh, the officials are only human, an element of human in the air being expected in the game. Let's get something out of the way. You, me, Weasel, none of us get paid. These guys see at least 5 digits to do this job. They see the same replays now that we do. Now, back in the days when replay didn't exist, if anybody was alive back then.
When replays, you had only like 3 angles. Now you have 32 different angles.
I'm not even going to take it that direction. Mm-hmm. When replays didn't exist, the refs had a pass. Okay? Sometimes, and that was a really fast and odd play. That, if they would have blown it without replay, I'm all right with that. However, as clear as day, don't tell me you couldn't determine that that was a Dolphins ball. There are white jerseys all over it. All over it. I mean, yeah, who comes out of the pile with the ball does not determine who really recovered the fumble. Regardless whether that was a Dolphin or a Steeler or not, which it was a Dolphin. The Dolphins easily, by the same replays that I'm looking at as that the officials also have, had that ball. We don't get paid, we see it. Stuff like this is the reason we have a show. They still blew it. We're here to talk for the fan that doesn't get paid, that enjoys the game, instead of actually having a set and interpreting what actually happened on the field. This is another situation where the letter of the law ruins the outcome of a game. And yes, Bears fans, I'm looking at you and Calvin Johnson. This is crap. Anybody else have anything to add to that?
See what you were saying with the, you know, with the human, with the perspective of, you know, failure. That's why if the replay is there.
Exactly.
You get the call right, and you're still not getting it right. I mean, it's...
Because this letter of the law crap, instead of actually using a little bit of, you know, judgment in situations where... I'm sick of the argument of, well, that isn't what should have happened, but that's what the rule says.
But it's the lack of common sense that's out there in the world these days. I mean, it's just ridiculous. When the head referee goes over, sees that it's a fumble, sees there's a pile there, why doesn't he pull over the other refs in conference before he announces saying there's insufficient evidence? How is there insufficient evidence?
It's right
there. Clear as day.
Well,
great, there was over 3 minutes left when this happened. Steelers had all 3 timeouts left.
Well,
Dolphins had none.
We'll get to the outcome of the game and how and all that in a minute, because I want to touch on that
right.
too. But what were you going to say, Weasel?
I forgot.
Okay, but yeah, getting back to the outcome of the game, like you're saying, the Steelers still had all 3 of their timeouts, and they could have slowed the Dolphin progression because the Dolphins would have had the ball on the 20 due to a touchback
right.
with 2.5 minutes left in the game.
Yep.
That's a true statement.
And you had the 2-minute warning and 3 timeouts. So.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they got a first down, you could almost.
But I can even take the hypotheticals out of it with that. Here's what I know as of that 2 minutes and 30 seconds where the Dolphins are up 22-20. They still had to get 5 field goals to get there.
Right.
Which, by my count, is 20 points they left on the field by none of those 5 being touchdowns and getting 4 points more each connection. That's what I know for a fact. Yes, calls were blown. Yes, things were screwed up. Yes, the Dolphins got shafted. But do your job.
I'll kind of go off of that. All right. There are 3 games. I'm actually going to reference a baseball game in this also.
Oh, get out.
No, no.
Get the hell out.
I know. Okay. In this game, the Dolphins got the ball. First off, the Steelers returned a kickoff, fumbled it, got the ball to the 20-yard line. What'd they do? Three and out, field goal.
Mm-hmm.
Second possession, Big Ben got sacked, fumbled, got the ball to the 14-yard line. What happens? Three and out, field goal. The Dolphins get the ball back with, I believe it was 2:30, 2:14 left.
22-20.
No timeouts, but they had they did have a 2-minute warning. They essentially three and out, incompletions, and
I got it wrong. Okay, you mean what actually happened? Down 23-22, about 2:15 in the game. They did select a 2-minute warning.
2:15 in the game. They had a 2-yard run and then three incomplete passes.
Mm-hmm.
So. There was I'll reference some games. I'm going to mention the Viking game. The Vikings, they had 5 turnovers in the NFC Championship game against the Saints.
Sure.
They had some pretty crappy calls against them in overtime. The Meacham thing.
Some calls that you interpreted as everybody else knew were right. But what you're touching on is the turnovers concept. Yes. They shot themselves in the
Okay. Place. So, yeah. They could have won that game still, but they didn't. Blame the refs, whatever. Jay Cutler, I believe it was against Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Denver, when he was with, I think, them, he threw a ball and it went backwards, and Ed Hockley ruled it as an incomplete pass when it went backwards, and it was recovered. Okay. Now, in that game,
That was two years ago
with Denver. And
two or three.
It was, I think, Chargers. And in that game, the Chargers were, I think, Denver was still down. Or Chargers, whoever, they were down by 7 points still.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have stopped him, gotten the ball, maybe returned it or whatever. And even the baseball game with the Cubs. Sorry, I have to mention this. Where that kid caught the ball, I forgot his name, but he caught the ball in the stands that would have prevented a Cubs out to make them go to the World Series. Well, the thing was they were already up in that game. They were already up, and they ended up giving up more runs.
Mm-hmm.
So they lost. So crap like this is going to happen. It was a fumble. Dolphins most likely 90% cover, but you still gotta, you gotta overcome that. I mean, if it happens, I mean, crap like that happens in the NFL, you gotta overcome it.
So it all goes back to what I've been saying, that these referees are predicting the outcome of the game, not the players.
Yeah.
Not the play, not everything else, they're affecting it. I mean, with these horrendous pass interference calls late in the game, too, that come up, this little bit of contact needs to go. I mean, they're calling, trolling, pass interference left and right. I mean, they're just bumping the guy down the field and everything. They'll call pass interference.
Mm-hmm.
The guy will stop, and you stop with them. They'll call you pass interference for holding.
In the interest of fair disclosure, they've been better about offensive pass interference, but you're right. They do call defensive too much.
Right. There has been quite a few offensive pass interference.
Yeah, they've gotten better about that. They've gotten better about that.
But still, it's just ridiculous with other offense. They go back to school or something, or just replace
them. But these are the greatest officials in the world!
Have them take a common sense test. Yeah.
The sky is what color? So, yeah, I mean, the point by many of the Steelers faithful, unfortunately, I'm not including you in this because you've acknowledged that the Steelers have had a couple extra players on the field during that play. Being the official, let's see. And, please don't start talking about that weasel. No. But the concept of the refs being important, even in one play, one series of a game, is unacceptable at this level, and it makes a big deal. The point I want to make is, in addition to the other one that the refs get too much of a break, is this game, this outcome changing the way it did, is going to change the playoff picture. If the Dolphins win this game, we're looking at the possibility, and still may be, in all fairness, of 3 teams coming out of the AFC East for the playoffs. Hasn't happened in the AFC yet, I don't think. And if it has, it certainly isn't out of the AFC East. Big deal of that. Instead, the Steelers are just in a bigger fight with the Ravens. That's all that's really done. So, anyway, all that aside, keep your debating skills on, gentlemen. We head over to study hall. it's time to pick next week's games. The first game we have is, Chris, what do you got?
Jags at Cowboys.
Jags at Cowboys. Weasel, go.
Matters how they play, but they play tonight in our as we're recording. But I'm going to pick the Cowboys. Jags, I mean, they could run the ball, but...
Tonight's game would be the Giants and Cowboys.
I know, but...
Well, you're talking about the Cowboys.
You could predict.
There could be injuries, there could be anything, you know.
You could predict based off of performance this week, but...
The depends on how they play was very John Madden of you. I appreciate
it. Oh, whatever.
The end of the game was...
In order to score, they need to have the ball.
Jags are a visiting team. I'm going with the Cowboys.
And I, too, have also solved Chris's mantra of the visiting Jaguar always losing. I, too, have the Jags. Let's jump
the Cowboys.
The Cowboys. No, I do have the Cowboys. Even though the Cowboys have been sucking lately, I see the Jags.
You're in a shirtless, didn't you?
Yay! What's our next game?
Fins at the Bengals.
Fins at Bengals. Chris, go.
I get the Bengals on this one.
Ooh.
I just, you know, they're up and down team. Dolphins have been up and down. Dolphins having a hard time putting the ball in the end zone. I think it'll come back and hurt them.
Weasel, go.
I believe that the Fins will win, even though most likely Bengals refs will show up because it's an at Cincinnati.
I'm at a bit of an impasse in what right now with my thinking because the Dolphins have only, in my eyes, really struggled against teams with poor defenses. Or excuse me, with good defenses. The Jets. The Steelers. I'm not counting the Patriots game. That was a bit of an anomaly all in the strength of special teams buffoonery. Okay? That's a little different. However, I believe in the Dolphins defense. I understand that the Bengals defense isn't half of what it was when they won the division last year. They're still playing like they got beat by the Jets in the first round. I got the Dolphins. What's next? Bucks at Cardinals. For my money, they've already beaten one NFC West team and about the only one that's good. Right at this moment, I'm going to go on a hook and say it. I've called the NFC West wrong. My heart is picking the Rams to win that division. I think they're going to do it. And I think the Cardinals are the worst team, even though they have more wins than the Niners in the NFC West. I got the Bucks. Weasel.
Bucks.
Chris.
Okay, Bucks across the board. Who else?
Vikings at Pats.
Weasel, who you got?
This game is going to be interesting because Brett Favre may not play, but he's not really the Brett Favre of last year, so.
Thanks, Captain.
Yeah. They lost by four against the Packers.
He's only hesitating because we're bugging him.
Brett Favre gave him 6 points. So, do the math. I'll pick the Vikings. Okay, Homer, whatever. Go.
This Weasel will be the Homer that says, no! As the Patriots win. Chris.
You know what? Randy Moss back in New England. Patriots secondary is not all that great. I think I'll have a good game. Even if Lamar Jackson is the quarterback.
Throw the ball far.
Vikings defense, I don't think is all that great as a pass. I mean, Adrian Peterson, I mean, their defensive front seven is pretty good. But Adrian Peterson still have a good game. I got the Vikings.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, I thought the Chargers against the Patriots last week have a struggling Chargers team. You know, with all his injuries, came up close.
Even though it took an onside kick to do it.
And with all the turnovers the Chargers had, you know, I think the Vikings will probably show their form next week.
All right.
With or without Favre.
I mean, and in all fairness, too, another point to the Vikings, I'll grant totally, is that Adrian Peterson has not been credited with a fumble this year. What's the next game?
What do you got?
He got Pat.
I said the Pats, yeah.
Steelers and the Saints.
Chris, go.
You know what? It's another one. Steelers got lucky last week. I got the Saints. You know, four interceptions by Drew Brees, unheard of. Saints will come back and perform. I got the Saints. They're at home. So.
Weasel.
Homer pick. Steelers.
You got the Saints, Chris?
Yeah, I got the Saints.
Okay. The thing that makes this tough is unless Chris Ivory has another really good game, which he has only really done against a weak team, the Saints still have no running presence whatsoever. And from what I understand, the reason why that's happening is because They're not worried about the run anymore. Drew Brees is in trouble. I'll grant he still threw over 356 yards or so playing against the Browns as he threw four interceptions. He had to throw the ball 50 times.
Against the Browns.
I said, right, against the Browns. Right.
I just reiterate that.
Okay, you just understand. It's because that team sucks, Cal. That's what I'm trying to say. The Steelers don't suck. I will say that about right. Yeah, okay, you can argue they got Browning lucky against the Dolphins. That's fine. That Steeler football, what happened, though? They beat the heck out of them on defense, held five field goals from getting into the end zone. Steelers don't have or the Saints don't have a defense that can keep up with the Steelers offense. The Steelers defense will continue to keep the Saints down. I got the Steelers. And the Monday night game that week,
Texans Colts.
Now that's the one I really don't want to pick. Weasel, go.
I got the Texans for this game. You got a passing attack, and both do too, but I got the Texans.
Be real with me, you're picking that one with your gut, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's okay. No, that's all right. You know, you're wearing Colts colors tonight, I'm saying.
Giants colors.
Yeah, there you go. But you picked the Cowboys. Anyways.
Cowboy colors.
No silver.
Yeah, Colts are embarrassed in week one in this game, giving up that many yards. They're not going to give up that many yards on the ground. I mean, Matt Schaub only threw the ball for 100 something yards a game. Well, I think that's more. I got the Colts on this one. They're just going to be embarrassed, even without Dallas Clark.
And Austin Collins.
No, it's not Austin Clark on.
On IR
but they
for the
still,
season. Yes.
You know, the Texans, you know, the Colts defense will come up big this game because of their lack of first game. Yeah. So I got the Colts. Peyton Manning, I'll say.
And that's the same thing, too. How much can Peyton Manning really do? He's awesome. I think he's the top quarterback in the league, and there's no question. And don't try to give me Justin Bieber Brady up in this disaster. It's not true. He is not the best quarterback in this league. I don't care how many rings he's got. What I do know is that the last time the Colts were this short on receivers, they struggled. And the last time, when they got all their receivers back, they were a threat. I think the Texans are getting him at just the right time to be short Dallas Clark, to be short Austin Collie. Well, they still have Pierre Garçon and Reggie Wayne. The running game hasn't been that impressive. The passing attack hasn't been that impressive. While the Texans' defense isn't that good themselves, I see Schaub and Andre Johnson and company doing a lot more damage than the Colts, at least this week. I'm going to pick the Texans, and it's against my moral fiber, but...
There's one thing that's over there, though, the Texans, the secondary. Play action. Peyton sells it better than any other one. Play action, Peyton go up, he'd go over the top. Pierre Garçon back now. He didn't have quite a Pierre Garçon in the first game.
That's true.
And then also...
Is he 100% though?
Blair White, the rookie guy that has been having a decent year, you know?
He's been an excellent possession
receiver. Right, so, I mean, you got those three. Yes, you are missing Dallas Clark to take away, but still, I mean, you still got the speed of Reggie Wayne and Pierre Garçon. I mean, play action sells it all. Those safeties are going to jump off the box, but they need to establish our game first.
So, anyways, that'll be the picks for this week. As it stands right now, where are we at overall?
We're all 25 and 15.
Great football minds. Look, regardless of how the Monday night game goes, even though it probably means that I'll pull ahead of Weasel.
Whatever.
Despite how the Monday night game goes, 25 and 15, you find me another analyst that's doing that good.
You can't front on that.
You can't front on that. And I say 25 and 15. 25 and 15 in the games that we pick, please. None of this, I picked the 49ers to lose to the Saints. Well, actually, I did do that, but that's not the point. Some of these other things where they, you know, they have the ease of picking the Ravens, beating the hell out of, you know, some pansy team. Anyway, so with that all aside,
next week's make or break.
Yeah,
it's gonna fall away somewhere.
Somebody is going to come out ahead. There's none of this tie.
I mean, four game difference between me and you, and then me and Weez.
Great.
Three, and you and Weez is one. So,
yeah.
One game difference.
Yeah, I
have 4 games in between, too.
Wow. Great football minds in Discord in week 8. In any case, if you want to comment on the Discord, go ahead and email us at thesotg@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, username thesotg. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can comment directly on the website. Go to the website, www.thestudentofthegame.com. Subscribe there and get weekly emails when we throw out the recording. But until week 8, we'll bring you what's great, the NFL. See you then.